The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Student university workers in California vote union. Meanwhile, contract faculty at NYU organize with the UAW. And today on the show, the author of Making It in America and the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Welcome to the Thursday, March 14th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Rachel Slade. Rachel is an author and journalist, and she recently came out with a book called Making It in America. She says, we all know the horrors of fast fashion, exploited mostly female workers, which leads to environmental destruction, cheap stuff that ends up in landfills. So what does it take to manufacture ethically in the United States of America? Well, Making It in America answers that question through a portrait of a female-owned company in the state of Maine. This is about Whitney and Ben Waxman's journey as they grew their unionized apparel company. They're affiliated with the steelworkers. The name of the company is American Roots. Now, Ben, he spent 10 years organizing workers at the AFL-CIO. He was very close to the late leader of the AFL-CIO. That would be Rich Trumka. Whitney, while she was a bartender, here's what they did. They mortgaged their house, cashed in their retirement to prove that capitalism could be a force of good. Well, in the world of manufacturing, it's mostly men. Whitney, well, she's the exception. She mastered the manufacturing process. She trained 150-plus workers. She built a supply chain from scratch. It's an amazing story, an amazing story. And when the pandemic happened 4 years ago this month, they were one of the first companies in America to manufacture PPE. Isn't that something? Amazing, amazing, because everybody was like, what are we going to get these masks? What about the gloves? Well, that's where American Roots came in. It's a great story, and Rachel Slade is going to share it with us. Scott Paul will be joining us later in the show, and this is a perfect segue because Scott, as you probably know by now, is the head of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He serves as president, AmericanManufacturing.org. And a couple things he's going to talk about today. And this is something that just happened 2 days ago. The steelworkers on Tuesday led a coalition of labor unions in calling on the Biden administration to investigate China's unfair trade practices in commercial shipbuilding. This is all through a Section 301 petition. Senators Tammy Baldwin, who's out of Wisconsin, and Bob Casey out of Pennsylvania, sent a letter in support of the trade case to the White House and joined the unions in denouncing Chinese-built vessels and the threat that they pose to our security. And this is what Scott said. The United Steelworkers and its allies in this trade case have identified a major threat to U.S. economic and national security. If we fail to rebuild America's shipbuilding capacity, we give China an overwhelming strategic advantage with disastrous repercussions. Strong measures in response to this petition are an essential first step to rebuilding America's maritime independence, and it is an urgent one. And the people support this, an overwhelming majority. We're talking 82%, more than 4 out of 5 people, U.S. adults, agree that China's dominance in the global shipbuilding industry is very concerning. A vast majority, 76% of U.S. adults, think that the use of Chinese-built dry docks to repair maintain, and retrofit U.S. Navy vessels is also a threat to U.S. national security. So we'll zero in on that. We're also going to talk about a report that the alliance issued recently uncovering the threat of Chinese autos to the United States. By the way, Scott was in northeastern Ohio recently. This was just a couple of weeks ago, and this was for the premiere of a movie that took a look at what happened to the steel industry some years ago, several decades ago. That was the film Relighting the Flame. And if you want to get some more information on that, relightingtheflamefilm.com. I understand it's being shown throughout the country. So we'll touch on that as well with Scott Paul. Now, a brief look into the world of labor, the segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Student workers in the California State University system have voted to unionize. The CSU Employees Union, which also represents support staff, will represent the 20,000 student bargaining unit, which, by the way, is the largest of its kind in the country. This group is affiliated with the Service Employees International Union. CSU faculty recently ratified a new contract as well. California's public universities are no stranger to making labor history. Workers at the University of California system staged the largest higher education strike in American history. That was 2 years ago. A wave of unionization in higher education continues, by the way. Contract faculty at NYU, who are full-time, non-tenure track faculty, officially voted to unionize with the United Auto Workers. The union won the election with 553 votes for, 72 votes against, and almost 70% of eligible workers turned out. In related news, Harvard residential tutors, proctors, and house aides announced a campaign to organize as the Harvard Union of Residential Advisors, or HURA for short. The tutors are graduate or professional students who provide support and mentorship to undergrad students while living in the undergraduate dorms. Now, HURA hopes to negotiate with Harvard for, among other things, uniform compensation, more equitable workloads, and increased transparency. Unionized editorial workers at Law 360, which is owned by LexisNexis, have voted overwhelmingly, and I mean overwhelmingly, 263-12, to authorize a strike as contract talks with the company continue to stall. Now, Law 360, the union, representing about 300 workers, is part of the News Guild, with over 95% of the union members voting. 96% voted to approve the strike, and that vote comes 2 weeks after Law 360 laid off 10% of its newsroom staff, despite the parent company's record profits last year. There's another one for you, making a whole lot of money, and they just want to make more. By the way, the News Guild is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. Let's go to Lake Tahoe, where ski patrollers at Palisades Tahoe, which is Lake Tahoe's largest ski resort, well, they took a significant step toward unionizing. 70% of eligible patrollers submitted a petition to the labor board requesting an election. The Palisades Tahoe Professional Patrol Association is the fourth ski patrol association to seek to join CWA Local 7781 this year, as the patrollers raise concern about safety, staffing shortages, and low wages. If this effort is successful, the association would be the first unionized ski patrol in the state of California. Amazon lobbyists have been barred from accessing the European Parliament. This is in Brussels. And this comes at the request of the EU's Committee on Employment and Social Affairs. The chair of that committee explained the move to bar the lobbyists. And this is pretty blatant. Amazon's refusal to engage in public dialogue with lawmakers has made it impossible for European citizens to gain firsthand accounts from the company's management on the pressing questions and allegations concerning Amazon's breach of fundamental rights of assembly, association, collective bargaining, and action, as well as fair and just working conditions. How many times I've said this on the show? Different labor law in Europe. Way, way better than the United States of America. And you got a company like Amazon that's pretty much doing what they want in the United States, but apparently they've got a roadblock when it comes to the European Union. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rachel Slade talking about making it in America. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information, America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Are you looking for a new healthcare partner for your union members? Let Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield be your champion, making sure your members live their healthiest lives. Now more than ever, it's important to have a partner you can trust, one who understands the unique challenges unions face. Anthem provides a variety of options to meet your organization's needs and helps you control costs without sacrificing quality of care. For more information, visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to Boston, Massachusetts right now. And joining us on our live line is Rachel Slade. Rachel is an author and journalist. And forgot to mention her website at the top of the show. It's rachelslade.net. And that's Rachel with an E-L. I have a daughter named Rachel, and it's A-E-L. So I was real particular when she was born. I didn't want the E-L. I wanted the A-L in there. But it's rachelslade.net. Rachel, welcome to America's Workforce. I heard a lot of good things about you, and I want to talk about your book, Making It in America. I mean, with a name like that, you belong on America's Workforce. You really do. And before we move on, talk to me a little bit about yourself. I see that you've quite accomplished. Boston Magazine, design editor, executive editor. You got some awards. What got you into the journalism field? Can we start there?
Yeah, well, I actually started out as an architect, and I thought that I could save the world that way. Turns out I was wrong, so I went into journalism instead. I really enjoy writing about cities and about working and about culture. And it was just a way for me to learn about this new city. I'm actually from Philadelphia. When I moved to Boston, I didn't know anything about this place. But it was also a way for me to connect with my world. Like, I think it's really, really important to leave the world better than how you found it. And so this is my small contribution to inching our nation a little bit forward, hopefully to a better place.
Well, Making It America is actually your second book, and there's a subtitle, The Almost Impossible Quest to Manufacture in the USA and How It Got That Way. Well, I know how it got that way. We kind of gave it away, and it took several decades for that to happen. But talk to me about your research. Well, let's talk about the story, too. It's an incredible story. It's about two people that kind of mortgage their house, their future, and said, we're going to do things differently. So let's start right there. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what's really interesting about the story, and by the way, I have been looking for people like this for a decade. I wanted to write this story for a decade, but I wasn't able to find the right folks. So here we have Ben Waxman. He actually worked for the AFL-CIO for a whole decade, and he saw, you know, what happened to America. As you said, we sold our future. We sold ourselves out by offshoring. He was there when a lot of companies were shutting down, standing side by side with workers, and, you know, it almost broke him. And he actually developed a drug addiction. It was just so painful for him to see all of this happening. And so he got back to his hometown of Portland, Maine, and he said, I'm going to turn this around. I'm going to create a model for how capitalism can be a force of good in my country, and I'm going to put workers first. And so when he and his then-girlfriend, now-wife, Whitney, founded their company, American Roots, their first mission was to ensure that their workers were well-paid, had vacation time, had sick time so they could take care of their children, and were members of a union. And in this case, it was United Steelworkers Local up in Maine 366.
That's amazing. So he actually reached out to the steelworkers to make sure that everybody was represented at the plant. Now, this was an apparel company. How broad were they? I mean, what were they doing? Shoes, shirts, everything like that, or what?
Well, they had to start small because neither of them had a background in any kind of manufacturing. Ben was a labor organizer, and Whitney actually was a bar manager. She had come from the service industry, so she had worked at the fabled Hogs and Heifers in New York City, and then she was up in Maine working at a bar in Portland. And so neither of them had any kind of manufacturing background. But mm-hmm. His mother, Ben's mother, had actually had a company sewing blankets using the beautiful textiles coming out of Maine's woolen textile mills at the time. And so he decided to go into apparel. And the first thing they started to make were fleece hoodies because they wanted everything sourced in America. And at the time, Polar Tech was made in Massachusetts, Malden Mills. And unfortunately, when that company shut down and mostly offshored their production, Ben and Whitney had to find a new material and a new product. And that's how they pivoted to cotton hoodies, which they now make, as well as t-shirts and other things. But everything is sourced in America, from the cotton that they use in their garments to the grommets that you use on the drawstring holes to the, you know, everything is made in America, and that's so important to them to ensure that their supply line is nice and clean and ethically derived.
So you mentioned he started out slow. They started out slow, and they started growing. And this is a true leap of faith. I mean, mortgaging their house and taking this giant leap here is quite amazing. There had to be some bumps in the road. He probably scratching his head wondering, wait a minute, what did I get into? Did you talk to him about that? I mean, and when did this actually start? And also, I'm throwing you a lot of questions here. When did it start? When did they realize that they were actually moving in the right direction? You know, making money doing this by making it in America.
Yeah, well, none of this is easy. And you're hitting all the right questions. They hit a lot of bumps in the road. And so they started small. Whitney held down her job for a bit over at the bar to make sure that, you know, it was actually feasible. One of the first hurdles, actually, was finding workers. They're up in Maine. Maine is one of the oldest states in the union, I think the average age is something like 38. And so, you know, where do you find workers? You have an older population, and nobody was trained in this. There's very little of this kind of work going on. They thought that they would actually capture or rehire people who had been in the apparel industry back before NAFTA. But all those people were either retired or off doing other things. And so they actually ended up training a large new American population. These are people who were coming from very difficult places like the Congo, like Iraq, like Vietnam, which actually is now doing very well. But these were people who were coming from abroad. So 2015, they started their company. The first person who walked through their door was a woman who had escaped Iraq with her family after the war. And she did not have a background, and she said, train me, I'm going to work for you. And as soon as the immigrant population started to hear that they were training and that they were providing really good, secure jobs, people started coming through their door, train me, hire me, I'll show up, I'll do the work.
Is she still with the company today?
She is, and actually she ended up becoming the union rep for the company. She's very passionate about, I know, she's very passionate about, you know, the idea that of what unions can do was something that she was very unfamiliar with. Of course, when she first started, she was just, her big focus was just taking care of her family. Her husband had serious health problems. She had three young children. But ultimately, she ended up speaking at the AFL-CIO National Conference, I think in 2017, which was a very moving moment for her. Obviously, English is not her first language, but she stood up on the stage in front of hundreds of people. And she just gave a short, very moving speech about what it means to be represented by the union. And it was just a beautiful speech. Every time I watch it, I cry.
I love it. We're speaking with Rachel Slade. Rachel is the author of, actually, it's her second book, Making It in America. And it's a very compelling story about a couple that took a chance here. And they got sick and tired of products that you buy in a store that are either made in China, Mexico, Vietnam, you name it. And it's called American Roots. And you mentioned they've been in business since 2013. And right now they have, what is it, about 150 workers? Is that correct?
Well, they've been up and down. The most workers that they had was actually during the pandemic, because right in March 2020, they were looking at their balance sheet and the whole country had shut down. And a big part of their business is selling to unions for conferences. So it's branded custom-made gear, you know, hoodies that have local names on them, and it's either embroidered or silk-screened. But when the country shut down in March 2020, they knew that those conferences were going to be canceled left and right, and there'd be no demand for their goods. And so Ben and Whitney came home that Saturday. I don't know if you remember. I think it was like the 13th or 14th, right after the country shut down. I might have the dates wrong. And they looked at their balance sheet and they said, "We're not going to make it. We can't hold on for 3 months without income coming in, without buyers buying our stuff. We're going to have to sell our machines and give up our factory space and lay off all of our workers." But they're sitting in front of the TV that night, Saturday night, and they're watching what's happening in New York City, the incredible, you know, spread of COVID and people in hospitals, but also the first responders, the doctors and the nurses and the EMTs who didn't have proper gear because China, if you remember, just stopped sending stuff over.
Right.
And they're sitting on their couch, and Whitney turns to Ben and she says, "We can make these things. We can make protective gear." And so they called up their board. They had an emergency meeting and they said, "What do you think if we do our best to make the factory safe? What do you think about pivoting to making masks and protective gear?" And the board said, "Go for it." And so the following day, Monday or Tuesday, or sorry, a couple days later, you know, they pull in their workers. There were 30 workers at the time. And again, remember, almost all of their workers were recent arrivals from other countries. Mm-hmm. And they gathered them together and they said, "If we do our best to make the factory safe, will you return to make masks?" Now, remember, too, these workers, they have families. They have young children. We didn't know anything about how COVID spread. It was scary as hell. But every single worker raised their hand and said, yes, we're coming back because we're American now, and this is what Americans do for each other. And they did. They came back. They came back. They started making these proprietary masks that they had developed. They started making face shields. And then suddenly there was huge demand. And by the end of the summer, they were up to 150 workers, which is actually it was scary. I mean, it was exciting, but it was scary, too. That's incredible growth in a short amount of time.
Right.
And then, of course, the Chinese masks started coming back into the country. They were cheap. They were significantly cheaper. And so they had to pivot again to apparel. But in a time that was very uncertain, 2021 was really no better for business than 2020 as people were trying to figure out what's going on, what have we done, where are we heading. So it was a very tough time, 2021. Even 2022 was tough. I think only 2023 is when the country really started to right itself.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, we think about, wow, you know, 3 or 4 years of that pandemic, and maybe a lot of us just kind of put it behind us, but I don't think we'll ever be the same.
No, it changed everything. It really did. What an incredible story. It's actually a feel-good story. Rachel Slade joining us on our live line today. She's an author. She's a journalist. And her book is Making It in America. We'll continue the conversation with Rachel later in the show. Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You could find more at oh.aft.org. We'll be checking in with Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, next Tuesday. And if you missed yesterday's show, in fact, we talked about Melissa briefly on the show with Randy Weingarten, who is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. Really enjoy talking to Randy. Right now, we're talking to Rachel Slade. Rachel is an author and journalist, and here's her website, rachelslade.net. That's R-A-C-H-E-L-S-L-A-D-E, rachelslade.net. And she's out with a new book called Making It in America. It's her second book. It's a compelling story about Ben and Whitney Waxman, who started an apparel store called American Roots. This was just over 10 years ago, and they peaked at about 150 employees, many of them from other places around the world, and they were making apparel. They're making hoodies, and I have to check, too, with them, and if you would be so kind, Rachel, if you would pass on Ben's contact information for me, I'd like to get him on the show. There's a IBEW shop in the South that have hats, Make America Union Again. And I'll tell you, I just love that. I think everybody needs to wear one of those hats, Make America Union Again. So let me talk to you a little bit about this book. We only have about 4 or 5 minutes left on the show here. The book is doing okay. Is it, how long has it been out? I mean, you know, I do a lot of PR in my day job and messaging. And, you know, when you have a compelling story like this one, I mean, here are some people you pointed out in the first segment. Whitney was a bartender. Ben, he was an organizer. He worked closely with Rich Trump. I loved Rich. He was on the show a number of times. So he had some labor connections there. And they mortgaged their house. They cashed in some of their retirement. They started a business, a very risky business, apparel business, which actually exploded when the pandemic came with personal protective equipment. But with that story, how is it selling in America right now? That's my question, Rachel.
Well, it's never easy because obviously their products are more expensive than stuff made abroad. And so, you know, they have to talk a lot about why their product costs what it does. And, you know, I think part of that equation is understanding the cost of a $10 sweatshirt or a $20 sweatshirt, right? Like, how many people have to be exploited? How many currencies have to be manipulated? How many tariffs have to be evaded in order to get that $20 sweatshirt to you? So their hoodie is expensive. It's all sourced in the United States. Like I said, their zippers come from L.A. The cotton comes from Texas. And but they're doing it. And the reason that they can succeed, I think, is because they really targeted the union market. That was Ben's wheelhouse. He knew unions. He was well-connected. And unions support each other. My grandfather was a labor lawyer in Philadelphia, so I feel very passionate about this. This is close to my heart. But unions take care of each other. They understand what it means and what it costs to support each other in America. It's not easy. And so that's their market. And, you know, there's actually a really lovely story in my book also about, you know, after they created this mask, it was a double jersey mask, and there was room in there for a filter. But then suddenly here they are again in the pandemic, and they need paper to cut so that you could put into the mask, you know, a paper filter that could be swapped out after a week or whatever, because again, we didn't know. We were making all this up as we went along. And so they were working with a professor at the University of Connecticut who specified what the paper needed to be. And then they put out a call through the AFL-CIO. Trumka was there at the time. He helped them get the word out that American Roots was looking for this kind of paper. And literally within 24 hours, they had samples from a paper factory up in Maine. And the guy was like, just tell me what you need. And that's the power of union, right? It is this strong network of people helping each other succeed. That's the way I see it. That's been their business model. It's worked for them. It's really, really, it's a heartening story, but it's also a tough story, right? It's difficult to make it. It's difficult to continue to make it, to support workers in an environment where cheap stuff just keeps coming in. We can't stem the tide. It's very difficult.
It's all about making it in America. We used to make it in America, not anymore. But slowly but surely, with people like Ben and Whitney Waxman, we can bring those jobs back. I love the story. Rachel, thank you so much for your time and your passion. I could tell in your voice you're so concerned about what's going on in America. Let's drive people to your website, number one, rachelslade.net, rachelslade.net. You can get information on the book there. You can purchase the book through there. But there's also a bookshop you want to promote too. It's called bookshop.org, where you can purchase the book, bookshop.org, Making It in America, a story that everybody needs to read. Rachel, thank you so much. And let's keep in touch. Can we do that?
Absolutely. It's been such a pleasure talking to you today.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about American manufacturing with Scott Paul. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number two right now. And joining us is one of our longtime regulars and proud sponsors. That would be Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I just love saying that. American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org. And the last time we had Scott on the show, we were talking about this movie premiere in Northeastern Ohio, Relighting the Flame. RelightingTheFlameFilm.com is a website to get information. And it was an array of people, including, well, Scott, also the CEO of Cleveland Cliffs, and Dave McCall of the Steelworkers. Scott, if you don't mind, let's start right there. And I apologize. My voice is a bit compromised today. and fighting off a head cold here. So I'm going to let you do most of the talking on the show today. But can you tell us how that premiere went? I could not make it. I was out of town that entire week. We were on vacation. But can you tell me how it went in northeastern Ohio for that movie premiere?
Yeah, Flash. First of all, hope you feel better soon. And we missed you, but we know that you were there in spirit, and we really appreciate you lifting up the movie on the podcast as well. It's fun to premiere a movie. I've never been part of one before. We didn't have red carpet, but we did have relighting the flame up on the marquee, and as you indicated, we had a audience of both the distinguished guests and a lot of people who were featured in the short film. The most important thing that I think came across both from the audience feedback and that what we've discovered since we put it out on the streaming world is that people have been really hungry for a success story in manufacturing, you know, because it's almost always about plant closures or, you know, workers who have been impacted. And certainly, as you know, there have been a lot of ups and downs at the Cleveland Works, and it's had a couple of different owners, and it's been through, bankruptcy and closures a couple of times. But this film details that, but also kind of the latest iteration of all of this, which is, you know, how it is helping to bring a new generation of workers, you know, young men and women in their 20s and in their 30s, and it's been transformative for them. You know, the jobs are well paying. They're obviously union steel worker jobs. They come with a great starting salary that even if you had a 4-year college degree, it'd be hard to match that coming right out of the blocks, and good benefits, and has allowed them to buy homes and contribute back into the community. And take a great deal of pride in what they're making. And so the Carl Chris, the film director, who I know you had on the podcast as well, he was able to tell the story through the lives of a couple of workers in Cleveland, also at the Burns Harbor Works in Northwest Indiana and down at a Cleveland Cliffs research facility in Southwestern Ohio as well. But the reaction has been really strong. We're going to have a premiere of the movie next month in Northwest Indiana, which is also one of the subject mill sites. We have plans to screen it here in D.C. I know Carl is trying to land it at some film festivals around the country and has had some interest in that. And it's one of the most popular products we've ever had on our YouTube channel, and that's just been people who have found it and have wanted to watch it. We haven't even promoted it yet. So we're looking forward to it, and we're just glad that we could help get the word out about how transformative these careers can be, what a comeback story deal has been, and the power of the steel workers and the company working together to make it possible.
Well, Scott, we'll do what we can to promote the movie. We hit it pretty hard here on America's Workforce. And to your point, Carl was a great guest. He worked at one of the local TV stations. We knew a lot of the same people. So, yeah, let's keep this ball moving in the right direction. Good stuff here. It's a heck of a story. And I'll tell you, I got emotional during the interview with Carl because I remember when that flame came back. I had a pull. I was driving into downtown Cleveland to do the show. And I had a pull to the side of the road when I saw that, because I saw when that flame went out. And when it was relit, I go, oh, my God, they're back. They're back. It was so great. It was so great. All right, let's talk about, well, first of all, I want to talk about these Chinese shipbuilding, the problem with Chinese shipbuilding going on here. But first, I saw the numbers, and we talked about this early in the week, about 4,000 jobs lost in manufacturing. We had a really good year last year. I remember you and I talking about it. What was this, just a blip or what? What's your take on this?
Yeah, so this is, you know, there's nothing like monetary policy to put people to sleep, Flash, so I'm sorry about that. But I think a lot of this is, you know, there's a lot of factory construction underway, and there's a lot of things that are in the pipeline But it's not online yet, and so those factories don't have workers. You know, there are construction workers, they're building it, but there's not workers in the factories yet. That's going to come. It's not quite there yet. But what is happening is you're seeing the fact that the Fed's interest rate policies are having their impact. They're kind of slowing things down a little bit. But unfortunately, manufacturing is almost always the canary in the coal mine for all of that. And this is the, you know, I guess this is the underbelly of standing out. And I'll explain it this way. The United States, and many people may not see this or feel this yet, but we're far and away doing better than almost any other economy in the world right now. No joke, both in terms of inflation, output, all of that stuff. We're mm-hmm. doing really, really well compared to the rest of the world. The impact that has is that, you know, our ability to export abroad, because there's a reduced demand, it goes down a little bit. That impacts manufacturing. And you have countries like China, and get this, China has probably somewhere between 10 and 15 million automobile unit excess capacity in the country right now. People are not buying cars there, but they have the capacity. And so they have like unfilled capacity of like 10 to 15 million automobiles, which, by the way, 15 million automobile sales in the United States in a single year is a pretty good year here. So that's going to be disruptive too. And so we have, you know, I'm confident we can get out of it, but yeah, the kind of the global weakness and the interest rates are holding us back right now, Flash.
So 15 million automobiles, and right now they are trying to get those vehicles to the United States? Is that what they're trying to do?
Well, they're not going to get here yet because we have a direct tariff on it. There's a lot of safety regulations that they'd have to meet, but they are ending up in other countries around the world, like Mexico, the European Union, lots of other places. But the impact that has, if you have an oversupply, it brings down the prices, and so that impacts the producers all over the place, and we'll put some out of business. We got to make sure it doesn't happen in the United States. And so I'm not. That's an issue that's on the horizon for us. But that's just one example of how, you know, the other countries are going to try to export to the U.S. market to take care of their own economic problems instead of building up demand in their own countries, which is what we've done. We've tried to build up demand here. We've done it the right way, and so we have to be on high alert on some of these, some of these imports coming in to make sure that they're not disruptive, because we are seeing that already in some sectors of the economy, steel and a few other things. And so we've got to be very, very careful as we look ahead.
Well, let's switch gears here and talk about commercial shipbuilding. And I read your post, and this is all on AmericanManufacturing.org. China's dominion of the world shipbuilding capacity threatens U.S. economic and national security. What the heck is going on here, Scott? This is all yours.
Yeah, so, you know, a couple decades ago, we were the largest shipbuilding nation in the world. And you can think back to all the extraordinary things our shipbuilding industry has done over the last century, really. Today, we are churning out anywhere from 5 to 10 ships a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. China, has 232 times capacity than we do right now. And China is building more than half of the world's ships. The situation is so dire that the last couple of dry docks that have been built for the United States Navy, for our Navy have been made by China. Okay.
Oh no.
And so, you know, it's time that we, I guess, right the ship, to borrow a phrase there. And, we don't need to have parity with China here, but we do need to have an ability to supply more of our own maritime needs. And this has also been raising questions about security with ports, because so much of the equipment coming that's in our ports right now, the cranes that help to offload the ships and the logistical software, is also coming from China, and there's real concerns because, unfortunately, of things that Chinese Communist Party has done and is willing to do, that can put a lot at risk too. And so the United Steelworkers and some other labor partners, including the boilermakers, the electrical workers, the machinists, and I know you know all of these unions announced they were taking what's called a Section 301 trade case on Tuesday. And so it lays out all the arguments I made. The Biden administration will have 45 days to review it and say, we're going to accept this or we're not going to accept it. And then after that, they'll investigate it and provide any sort of relief that's necessary. And what the steelworkers and its partners are looking for is basically a mechanism where if Chinese ships are coming and docking in the United States, and there's a ton of them that do every day because they bring, you know, all the stuff that's in our retail stores, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that there'd be a fee, and that fee would go into rebuilding America's shipbuilding capacity so that we're able to ramp it up again, because we are really dangerously dependent on one of our potential adversaries for the logistics and transportation involved with maritime trade. And that is a big, big risk in the world today, Flash.
Boy, I can't believe these numbers. In 2022, China built almost 47% of the world's ships. South Korea, they came in second, just shy of 30%. Japan, third, with 17.25%. United States, 0.13%. 0.13%. That's really scary. Okay, now here, this is a loaded one here for you, Scott. You know what the House did yesterday with TikTok? I mean, that got all the media play in the world, all right? Because this might mean a ban on TikTok. Can we take this? This story is ridiculously serious. We're talking threatening national security. If we don't have ships, we're in big trouble. Can we somehow convince the House that this is a very, very important, as well as the Senate? I mean, we got a couple of senators here, but we got to get this on the front page of all media, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do anticipate we'll have a lot of legislative support for this. And in fact, Senator Baldwin from Wisconsin, Senator Casey from Pennsylvania, Congressman Garamendi from California, Senator Wyden from Oregon, you know, everybody's weighing in. Ultimately, this is going to be up to the Biden administration. The president himself, you know, tweeted or, you know, posted on X about this and said that they were going to take a hard look at it and that they stand by America's workers, which is good. It's good to get that acknowledgement right away. But you're right. I mean, you know, in some sense, and we've been talking about this, you know, for a few months, is that there should be relationship between the United States and China. And this has nothing to do with Asian Americans, with Chinese Americans, with the Chinese people. This is about the Communist Party of China having ambitions that are going to, you know, run into the interests of democracy and of the United States of America. And so we need to take steps, reasonable steps, to protect ourselves. The TikTok divestment bill was one of them. It doesn't ban TikTok unless the owners don't sell it. And there's a lot of folks who want to buy it, by the way. And so it's kind of the same deal here, is that we need to at least, I mean, have some balance. It's not like we want to shut China down from building ships. We just want to make more here, right? Because as you just pointed out, we're making virtually none right here. And so, yes, we are hoping that there is some momentum like that to make forward progress, because it's truly alarming. And we're not even talking about the military capability here. We're just talking about the commercial capability. The military story is also truly frightening. And so we've got to pay more attention to this, especially because I think that, you know, I'm kind of like a Teddy Roosevelt guy, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick. It's like, if we're able to project that force and they know it, then there's less likely to be trouble. But we have to have that capability.
Those of you listening, do check this out on the website for the Alliance for American Manufacturing, americanmanufacturing.org, americanmanufacturing.org. We're going to leave it on that note. You take care, my friend, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
You bet. Thanks so much for having me on, Flash. Appreciate it.
You, You got it. All right. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.